the views expressed in this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware.
WVUD presents Campus Voices, conversations with University of Delaware faculty, staff, and students about their teaching, research, service projects, and other interests. To introduce today's guest, here's your host, Richard Gordon.
Thank you, Jason. And joining us in the studio today, we've got two fine representatives of the University of Delaware's Geography Department, because we are going to debut this episode during National Geographic Awareness Week. David Lacates, welcome.
Thank you.
You are a professor in the Department
of Geography at the University of Delaware here.
And joining you also is a new graduate student, Kelsey Moxie. You are doing research, or is that correct?
I am doing research. I'm doing research with Dr. Klassens in the Geography Department.
What are you guys studying?
We are studying a project in the White Clay and Red Creek watersheds, and we are studying nutrient dynamics and nutrient removal within these watersheds.
Well, the first thing I think we need to do is we need to make sure that the folks listening at home know that you're from the Geography Department and not the Geology Department. Tell me, how can we tell the difference?
We get that all the time. Geology is the study of the Earth's surface, and geography is the study of what takes place on the Earth's surface. So one is essentially a study of rocks, and that's being a little disingenuous to geology, but they study the hard Earth, and we study the landscape of the Earth, what goes on the Earth, and the people and how they interact on the Earth's surface.
Now, I have very negative affect towards geography when I was in seventh grade, when I was given that assignment of drawing a freehand map of the United States, freehand, on a poster board, and I got a D double minus. But there's a lot, at least I didn't fail, but there's a lot more to geography than just maps and capitals and all that stuff, right?
Correct.
There is. For example, I'm in the Water Science and Policy program. However, there's also different aspects of geography. There's climate, there's human, there's the water, there's land. So it's a very broad aspect and a broad term that can be defined and specialized within certain areas.
Now, I warned Kelsey ahead of time that one of my favorite classes in college, this was back in the early 70s, was a course in geography and religions, talking about the interaction between the landscape and the religions that developed there.
That is very interesting. I mean, that's one of the things, is that human actions are driven by the landscape. I mean, different cultures have different characteristics, and the cultures, you know, of Asia are different than the cultures of Africa because the climate is a lot different, the landscape's a lot different, the natural resources are varied, the way the rivers run, every aspect is completely different. And so that's why geography is so interesting, is because there's just so much that goes on the landscape that dictates why people do what they do and why the landscape looks the way it does and why the climate exists in the way it is. And then we hopefully can put all of that together to better explain how human beings interact with the environment.
I studied abroad in Guatemala, and I had the fortunate opportunity to witness a spiritual ritual that the native Guatemalan Quechí people in the highlands were doing. It was in this cave. And their religion was influenced by Mother Earth and how she provided everything and how we came up from Mother Earth and how we need to, you know, be good to her. However, when Christianity came in from Spain and Germany, Christianity came in and they said, oh no, it's okay, you can do whatever you want to this earth because you will be going to a higher place, and as long as you do what I tell you to do, it'll be okay.
I mean, I can remember, this is from a professor, A. Dennis Bailey at Kenyon College back in 1973. And he was talking about how the Ganges River would influence the different religions that grew up in India, or the constant flooding cycle of the Yangtze River affected the religions that developed in China. So, I mean, it just you're right. It's like this all this stuff you study is the interaction between people and the world around them.
Correct. That is, in a nutshell, what geography is.
Let's talk a little bit about why you're here. Kelsey, you wanted to come down here and promote
Geography Awareness Week.
Woohoo! Every week is Geography Awareness Week.
It should be. But this week happens to be November 17th to 21st, Geography Awareness Week. And the topic of Geography Awareness Week is food. And who doesn't like food? I love food. It's great, and you need it to nourish your body, and you need it to live. So why not make it good for you?
How are you guys talking about food during this week?
Because food varies around the world. I mean, the food that people eat in Southeast Asia, quite a bit different than they eat in Nigeria, for example, than they eat in the United States. I mean, there's different cuisines that exist in different places. So, you know, people eat what they're used to, and people develop cuisines that's from the local area. So that's part of geography, is that, you know, food itself is not constant throughout the globe.
Do you guys get involved in, like, the study of how things like tubers made their way from South America to Europe, and, like, eventually even sweet potatoes became a stock staple for the poor in China?
Once we've gotten to a larger global environment, a lot of things have disseminated throughout the planet. And so we also look at cultural diffusion. How do behaviors and things like that move from one location to another? So, you know, Africa was a certain way, and then the, you know, cultural influence of Germans and others coming in, Belgian and so forth, changed a lot of their ways of thinking and a lot, you know, and influenced their culture as well.
Like Kelsey already described with Guatemala and the religions.
Well, even to expand on that, I learned in Guatemala that when the Germans came over, they didn't want to conquer the people. They wanted to just kind of employ them. And they said that corn and beans, a part of the Mayan Kekchi up in the highlands diet, corn and beans, that's what you got. And that's what the Germans gave them. And corn and beans maybe wasn't a crop that was, correct me if I'm wrong, was originally there. So now their diet was influenced on corn and beans, where there are other vegetables and other roots and other plants that are going extinct because of the staple diet now, because the Germans said, I don't want to, you know, hate on the Germans, but the Germans said that it's just corn and beans, and that's what they have now. They make their tortillas and everything.
Well, see, the problem with geography is that when you say geography, the first thing most people think of is place names. Quick, what's the capital of Turkey? And you're supposed to come back with Ankara, like this. You know, what's the major cash crop of Nigeria? Petrochemical. So, you know, I'm a geographer, so I can handle this. But the idea is you're supposed to be able to come back with those kinds of things. But somehow that's all geography is: place name, capitals. What's, you know, which state is south of South Dakota? Those kinds of things. And so, but you would never think of English as simply being what are the alphabet? You would never think of mathematics as just counting. Both of them are far more than just that. And so geography is far more than just what do we call Burkina Faso now? What was its old name? You know, those kinds of issues. So those questions are sort of the old-fashioned geography. The new geography is really how and why do things change over space? Why is Chicago where it is? I mean, there's a very good reason why Chicago was located where it is. It's because it's the farthest you could get inland by ship.
Oh, coming down to the Lake Michigan.
Exactly. So there's all sorts of reasons why the landscape looks the way it does, why people behave the way they do, and a lot of it can be attributed to spatial relationships. And that, in a nutshell, is what geography is all about: explaining the environment based upon the idea that things vary over space.
One of the things I think is really cool about geography is the different kinds of technology you get to use. I mean, because you guys are doing climate mapping, you're doing, you know, satellite imagery, all sorts of stuff.
Part of my research was trying to classify where mushroom farms are and where mushroom compost is. And I used GIS, a lovely remote sensing tool, to see where are those mushroom farms. And I get to, you know, draw my little polygons and see, you know, this is a forested area, this is the human development area, and hey, maybe I did find some mushroom farms there. And you can use GIS and apply it to geography in many ways. I mean, mushroom farms, and there's like, you know, a place to put, the best place to put a Starbucks based on, you know, the demographics, the salary, how to price things. And maybe if it's a high income district, maybe make that cup of coffee $4 instead of $2. So
you guys even get into the economic issues.
Economic geography, political geography, social geography, climatology, geomorphology, geotechniques such as geographic information systems, GIS, remote sensing. We do an awful lot of stuff in geography. So it's not just, you know, just memorizing a bunch of place names. It's a wide variety of things that touches a wide variety of different disciplines.
Joining me on this side of the console, we have Ashley Barnes from University of Delaware Office of Communication and Marketing, and she has been brave enough to join me in a really important game called Stump the Hosts. Kelsey?
I have a lovely quiz for you guys, and since Geography Awareness Week is about food, I have a quiz for you, some food-related questions. The first question for the three of you, what signature food is Delaware known for?
What do you think?
It's going to
be chicken or crabs?
I'm thinking
muskrat,
but I think...
Muskrat?
I think it's lower, here, but I guess poultry, right?
You think? I'm going to say poultry, too. Yeah. Chickens.
I'm from southern Delaware, so I take offense to the slower, lower...
They have little stands up on the side.
Ashley was just making a geographic observation.
Of course, it's Del Marvelous fried chicken.
Well... one of these answers was chicken and biscuits, but according to the Cooking Channel, It is our boardwalk-inspired fries.
Oh, okay.
That's a Delaware food?
Well, you know.
They've got it all up in New Jersey.
Well, you go down to Rehoboth, and what do you get when you go to Rehoboth Beach?
Thrashers.
You get some Thrashers.
Mm-hmm. Throw some Old Bay on there.
Oh, yeah.
Delicious.
Vinegar.
Mm. I would never have guessed that. Sorry.
Well, I think the four of us all thought it was chicken, and you say it was fries.
Well, my sources from different sites say it's chicken because, you know, the blue hen is Delaware's national or state animal. Yeah, and fighting blue hens, University of Delaware. So I will count.
What's next?
And Sussex County has more chickens than any other county in the state, or in the country.
Yeah. Really?
Yep. And Kent, I think, is 20th on the list.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So chicken is definitely something that makes life run downstate.
Ashley, what do you think? I think we're making a pretty good case that Kelsey's wrong, that it's chicken and not potatoes.
I have it there. I do. But
in the important half of the state, I'll add.
What else you got for us there, Kelsey?
All right, my second question. Which state is Chipotle, the famous restaurant, is considered to be the most iconic or emblematic?
What do you think?
Oh, gosh. It's got to be something East Coast, because West Coast has way better options, I would think, at least.
You think?
Yeah.
I'm going to guess North Carolina.
If I'd have to guess, I'd say Maryland, but I'm from Maryland, and I don't care for Chipotle, but...
I have years at the University of Oklahoma. And so there's like tons of Tex-Mex groups out there. So it could be one of those groups, but if you're asking the question, I'm going to guess that it's probably not Texas, Oklahoma.
Because you're talking the restaurant chain, right?
Yeah.
Restaurant chain.
You're not talking about cooking with Chipotle peppers.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, so I'm going to say it's not Oklahoma, Texas.
No.
And I don't think it's New Mexico either.
No.
Or Arizona.
Get a little bit close. According to Thrillist, it's Colorado.
What?
I know, right? Well, you think Chipotle is known for their organic or local ingredients. They try to use ingredients, I mean, within each area or each restaurant chain that
I didn't know that about them.
Either. Yeah.
Actually, that's a good point to raise. It's some people aren't vegetarians. They're localitarians. Mm-hmm. They're really seeking out the local option for food.
A couple of my research is, like I mentioned, focused in the White Clay, Red Clay watersheds, very local to Delaware. And we have the mushroom capital of the world, Kennett Square. Oh, yeah. It's a little bit smelly, but it produces great mushrooms. So, you know, those little localists or vegetarian localists or whatever, you know, get your mushrooms from there. It's only a couple miles down the road. And it affects the landscape because they are known to have increased loads of nutrients into the streams. They're local.
Really,
streams.
From the mushroom farms?
Not just the mushroom farms, but since there is a increased mushroom farm production, there's also other sources, such as urban areas, too. Mm. But there is a correlation between the mushroom farms and the stream quality.
We're talking with David LeGates and Kelsey Moxie, both from the Department of Geography. And you're hearing us as we're talking that geography is everything from mushrooms to religions. It's a lot more than just what some of us suffered through in middle school. And right now, Kelsey is in the middle of trying to stump those of us on this side of the console, Ashley Barnes from OCM and myself, and occasionally Sarah, the intern down there, with some more Stump the Hosts here on National Geographic Awareness Week.
My third question for you guys is, in the United States, which cities allow the public consumption of alcoholic beverages in most, if not all, of its areas?
I'm going to guess
Las
New Orleans.
Vegas. Oh, well, I have options for you.
Oh, you have options? Oh, let's see. Ashley chose Las Vegas, and I chose New Orleans. Let's see how we do.
New Orleans.
Yeah. All right.
Savannah.
You're kidding me. Savannah, Georgia?
Indianapolis. None of the above or all of the above. So which ones?
Oh, so Vegas didn't even make the list, but it might be.
It's on there, but I just picked three for you guys.
Options.
Yeah. I'm thinking it's. The options were Indianapolis.
Yes.
Savannah, Georgia, New Orleans.
All of the above or none of the above?
Well, it has to be all of the above because we're thinking New Orleans, definitely. And Indy has the races. So sure, we'll give Indy, right? Maybe?
I don't think you can walk around downtown Indianapolis, you know, with a bottle of hooch.
Okay.
That's a good Midwestern part of the world, you know?
Right. Yeah, we'll go
New Orleans.
NOLA.
We're going with New Orleans.
All of the above.
Oh!
If not, it says, if most, if not all of its city area. This is according to the Huffington Post.
All right, now, you got to tell me, how is drinking patterns in cities related to geography?
Oh, Texas, Oklahoma, parts of Louisiana. Because I was at LSU for a year and a half. Tell me, that's why I'm going to disqualify myself from answering the question. But there are dry counties.
Yeah.
Then there are places you cannot drink. So, yeah, I mean, you never really see this on the East Coast, but in the Midwest, that does exist. And so there are places in the various cities and in various counties where you cannot get a drink publicly.
Do you, guys study, why it happens? Or
Because
it would look at, the movements of people, too, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and one of the interesting things people have looked at is the sweet tea line. Where when you order iced tea, does it automatically come pre-sweetened?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you go deep enough in the South, you ask for iced tea, it will be sweetened. If you specifically ask for unsweetened, they look funny at you, but we'll bring it. Mm-hmm. If you go far enough to the North, iced tea is by definition unsweetened, and here's sweeteners over there in the corner if you like them. Where does that sort of break off? I mean, geographers have gotten caught up sometimes too much in trying to regionalize, create regional patterns. So where does the South really end? Where does the North begin? Was it traditionally the Civil War and which states seceded and which states didn't? Or are there more areas that better define what we mean by the Deep South versus, you know, fringe South versus other places?
I actually went to college in North Carolina. Which side of the line was it on?
Always sweet.
Oh, it's sweet?
Oh, yeah. You get crazy looks if you ask for unsweetened tea. Sometimes they don't even have it. Good luck.
I mean, all this stuff is interesting. It's like all these different habits we have. We're mocking a little bit talking about alcohol and tea, but these are all related to the habits that we've brought as we move around.
Yeah, and the assumption is that the United States is sort of homogeneous, and it's anything but. I mean, even in a large state, a large country like this, there are still areas where people do different things. And I'm sure you find that in many other countries.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just even going in the United States, we're from Maryland. I mean, what is Maryland known for? We got our crabs, like the crustaceans, you know, those juicy things you rip open and you just tear the meat out of them. And now the thing is that everyone has their proper way to open them. There's different kinds of picking methodologies.
Eastern Shore is different from the Western
Shore. Yeah, and then there's some people on the Eastern Shore that work at the Phillips Crab Factory can pick a crab in less than 30 seconds. Oh, yeah.
Ashley, you understand this is radio, so if you nod your head, the people at home can't see it.
I completely agree.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And us Marylanders, we take a lot of pride in our crab culture. Every summer, you know, you always have to have a crab feast. That's what everyone, you know, everyone around just loves to have a crab feast and pick crabs. It's part of who we are.
What are the kinds of
We're not Marylanders.
Oh, I'm a Marylander, though.
Yeah,
Delawarean.
Yeah.
So what other kinds of regional feasts are there that are tied into? I mean, it's obvious why in Maryland you mean the crab feast because, you know, that's
Scrapple. The Apple Scrapple Festival downstate. Yeah, I know you're choking, but that's you know, you go to the Midwest and, you know, Oklahoma, they ask for Scrapple, they won't know what you're talking about.
If they do, they'll be grossed out.
Could be. Some of the Midwesterns aren't, I mean,
well,
they eat ham hocks and stuff like that, so they eat weird stuff, too.
Yeah, I'm from the Midwest, so, I mean, you know, we there aren't ways to eat our own weird things.
Yeah.
Kelsey, you got another food question for us?
So now we're going to go into agriculture.
Ooh.
True or false? There are the same amount of farmers today than in 1750 in the United States.
Ooh, she went back far enough that that's not very populated.
Yeah.
Because I was all set to say.
Absolutely false.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that far back?
Hmm. So, like, we have to real quick do some population calculations.
Right.
And some migration calculations.
Right. What year was it again?
1750.
Okay.
To
2014.
Okay.
I'm going to say there got to be more farmers now than then because we get a lot more territory. What do you think?
I think I agree with that. I think I'll go with that.
Well, it's true that there are the same amount of farmers.
Wow.
Because today, 90% of the population had to sustain themselves by farming.
Yeah,
through
yeah.
agriculture. But only 1% today are directly involved in farming. This is not the farmer's daughter. This is the farmer itself.
Yeah,
1% to sustain our huge, or even global population.
All right, listen, we got a quick sample. We got 5 people, right? That's statistically significant.
Right.
Farmer? No. Farmer? No. Social media? Social media? Technology? We got 0 farmers in here.
Yeah, but we're a bad cross section. I teach statistics. We're not a good random sample. I'll be back on National Statistics Week.
But that's interesting, and again, that's something that geographers study is how people's relationship with the land, their migration patterns, and all that change the occupations that people have.
How and why? Yes.
Here she comes. Last question from Ms. Kelsey Moxie, our quiz mistress.
We're going to go to the world now. So which food group does the average person in this world consume the most or is part of our largest part of our caloric intake?
And what are our choices?
Well, you got, you know, the daily food groups. You have meats, produce, your fruits and veggies. You have your fats and your sugars, you have your grains.
Caloric intake, though.
Caloric.
I'm going to say meats.
Oh, really? I would say it's going to be grains because of all the rice and wheat.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know how. But then you also got, you know, potatoes all over the place, too. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Sarah, the intern, you're going to have to weigh in on this one. What do you think?
I don't know. I'd say team carb, probably grains, and that's what would be my guess. I'm agreeing with you.
So Sarah's saying more generic carbs. I'm thinking it's grains. if I have to be that specific. And
I'll stick with meat just to be different, but I'm kind of, now that we've thrown in
different.
Rice and everything.
She's different.
All right, well, you are correct.
Who's correct? You've got different answers here.
Richard, you are correct. Grains. The grains consume 45% of the globally average diet. But in the United States, it is fats and sugars.
Yeah, that I would have guessed. All about the ice cream.
Oh, yeah. Love our chocolate.
But actually, see, here's what I think is cool about geography is you guys get to interact with people from other colleges.
Most definitely.
I mean, you've got people doing environmental stuff, which involves people in engineering, in arts and science, in CANR, the College of Agriculture and Natural Resources. Mm-hmm. You know, the climatology involves some work with physicists and with all sorts of other kinds of scientists who do visualization.
We've got globalization, so people doing political science, people doing, you know, preparing cities, urban development, those kinds of issues.
In the geography program, since I'm affiliated with the geography program, but my major, if you can say, is water science and policy. It's focused in everywhere. I mean, the agricultural department, the, you know, College of Arts and Sciences, and
different departments within your own College of Earth, the Ocean, and the Environment.
Mm-hmm.
This has been a whole lot of fun. Thank you so much,
Thanks
Ashley.
For stumping us. That was
yeah.
fun.
And thank you, Sarah, the intern, and thank you, David LeGates,
sure.
professor in geography.
Very good.
And Kelsey Moxie, a grad student in geography.
Thank you.
Why don't you give one last shout out for National Geographic Awareness Week?
National Geography Awareness Week is November 17th to the 21st, and just keep on thinking of how geography and food are connected and influence each other.
There's more going on in K-12
yeah.
with the Delaware Geographic Alliance. That's interaction between the University of Delaware and teachers, and so the idea is to give them resources which they can put together.
Okay.
So they have things like where kids are asked to wear. For one day, they're actually allowed to come in with T-shirts and stuff. So they might have Manchester United and then have to get up and explain where it is.
Okay.
Or they might have the University of Nigeria in Asuka,
uh-huh.
you know, and then have, you know, so you can wear a geographically oriented T-shirt when you're not really allowed to wear T-shirts normally.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sort of the idea is that for one day you can show geographical support by wearing a T-shirt of
That's
a region
fun.
And being able to explain it. So then they do all sorts
cool
of fun things like that.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went to high school and grade school in St. Louis, and my grade school knows I live in Delaware. So every year I get a letter from a fifth grader asking me to send a postcard from Delaware because they don't know anybody from Delaware.
Yeah.
That's so
cool.
But that's the kind of activity that gets discussed at that website and by the Delaware
yeah.
Geographic Alliance.
Yeah. And that was originally started by National Geographic as an outreach to K-12 because, you know, geography teachers don't have a lot to rely on. And mm-hmm. so the question was, how do you integrate all this stuff? And sometimes geography is just too eclectic for its own good. So the idea is, you know, you've got K-12 teachers with geographic standards. How do they develop course materials that are standards-based but allow them to teach geography across the board? And that's been the Alliance's goal, has been able to generate that kind of thing.
I think it's really important to try and generate that enthusiasm with kids.
And so they don't think that geography is nothing more than place names.
And capitals.
And they understand that, yeah, it's everything working together.
Thanks so much, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Campus Voices. The views expressed on this program are those of the individual guests and do not necessarily reflect the official views or policies of WVUD or the University of Delaware. For more information about Campus Voices and to find archive copies of this and other episodes, visit our website. Using all lowercase letters, go to www.udel.edu/campusvoices. We invite you to tune in every Thursday morning at 8:30 for Campus Voices on 91.3 FM, WVUD, and WVUD HD1, Newark, or online at wvud.org.